Welcome to the Leadership Learn podcast, brought to you by the Inspirational Development Group. Each episode, we examine the behaviours, skills and attributes required to improve human performance through effective leadership. We discuss the latest thinking and issues affecting leadership from the boardroom to the classroom to provide you, whether you're a CEO, manager, graduate or student, with tangible insights to take away and use in your career and workplace as we go beyond the clichés to prove that leaders are made, not born. In this episode, we are talking about courageous conversations. Those conversations where you need to discuss difficult or problematic topics, but as a leader, you know you are going to have them, be it with your team, your peers, or your bosses. Having these conversations and how you deal with them are a vital part in the efficient running of any organisation, and they're also important, of course, from an individual's point of view in both their personal and professional lives. But of course, for a lot of people, they're hard to have in the first place, and we'll be talking about why that is, whilst others struggle with making sure that these conversations are productive and positive. And we're going to really dig into that as well, talk about preparation, phraseology, active listening, how to adapt depending on the person you're talking to, and a lot more. I'm Matthew Moore, I'm your host, and I'm joined again by leadership guru Nigel Girling, who has been the CEO of multiple organisations, a government task force member, and is a chartered companion of the Chartered Management Institute, and Dr. Rona McKenzie, an experienced leader in both education and business, who has been a college principal, a COO, chair of the Institute of Directors, and much, much more. So I want to begin, Rona, by asking you, what are some of the examples of these conversations and where they might happen?
God, it can be anywhere, can't it? I mean, at home, at work, in Tesco's.
Other supermarkets are
available. Other supermarkets are also applicable. These courageous conversations can be needed anywhere. And I think what's really interesting is about your perception of needing to be courageous. So for some people, having honest conversations is very, very easy and straightforward. And for others, it's more challenging because they perceive there's the potential for conflict or loss somewhere along the line. And so whether that's at home or at work, it is all around the individual and their perception of needing to be courageous.
Yeah. Why do some people find it easy and some people find it hard, Nigel?
A million reasons, I guess. But I mean, going from what Rona was just saying, I mean, there's a kind of a cultural dimension to this, which could be a national culture. For example, in some countries, giving any kind of critique or criticism to your elders and betters is absolutely not acceptable. Mm. I once taught a year of Chinese students in university and would do the things I would normally do, which is throw questions open to the floor, state an opinion, say, what are you going to say about that? And quickly realized that the answer was nothing because they weren't allowed to disagree with me because I was the teacher. Mm-hmm. And it taught me a lot about how the importance of other people's perceptions in this process. That I think often when people are talking about things like courageous or honest or difficult conversations, they focus on themselves and how they feel about it. And that's not the primary issue. The primary issue is how it's received and what the effect is. And Rona, you mentioned this thing about loss. You know, a lot of people are conditioned not to do this because of the fear of the consequences.
As you say, Nigel, some work I was doing with a client last week, we were talking about not just how do we feel about being honest and having these conversations, but how does the recipient feel? And are we aware of their perception of the conversation? Do we know how they might respond? Not in the sense of what they're going to say back, but how comfortable they'll feel in hearing that feedback. And I think, like you say, often we focus on what we're doing and saying and not on how it will land and how it will be heard by the other person.
So how are we defining a courageous conversation? How does a courageous conversation differ from an ordinary conversation? Is it a particular setup of a review, you know, when you know you've got a review coming up, or can it be other scenarios?
I think it can be anything where your perception is in giving someone some honest feedback, it makes you feel uncomfortable. just the thinking about doing that. Or if you've thought about who's receiving it, you think it might make them feel uncomfortable. So it might not be honest, it might not be courageous for you, but it will be courageous for them to receive. Or it might well be that you need to have some extra, an extra boost of courage to have that discussion. And so it's definitely down to your kind of inner continuum of honest happiness to be honest. Some people find it really easy to just speak kindly and generously about their feelings in a way that others aren't threatened by, but they're able to be really honest because other people want to we want to improve and we want to do well and we want to be respected. So getting this feedback can be very helpful as we grow through our lives. Some people find that very natural to do and others less so. So I think that everyone's got that kind of internal meter of how much courage they need to have this conversation. And so I don't think there's a really hard kind of definition.
No, but I wonder how that would then, with you, Nigel, how you would define it, because I can't imagine you have ever felt uncomfortable at the thought of having a conversation.
Certainly had lots of them. It's an interesting point there, because I am, as you kind of imply there, naturally inclined to say stuff that other people might not say. And for a long time, that probably wasn't positive, because I did it for my own amusement, or because I couldn't help myself, or just because I thought it needed to be said, but didn't think enough about how it landed. And whether the longer term impact would be positive or negative. So it took me a long time to kind of rein back on thinking about how much fun it was and start thinking about what the repercussions might be and whether it actually was helpful in some way. I had a colleague many years ago who helped me with this, who said to me, I always think of it as the gift of feedback. And that really still resonates with me. The fact that what you're giving somebody is a gift, something that helps them, that they will recognize as helpful to them, but not necessarily in that moment. And that's
that's so important. We talk about that. Our colleague Joanne and I were having a conversation around feedback and saying feedback is a gift, and it's your perception of reality. It's not the truth. It's just what we see through our eyes, and our map of the world, if you do any NLP, our map of the world is very different to everybody else's, and we can't possibly understand anyone else's map of the world. We've never walked in their shoes for long enough, and so it's really important that we do start to walk in their shoes with them and understand a little bit more about their map, but that we are conscious that we are giving them our perception of what we've seen or heard or felt, for them to consider. And last week when I was working with some clients, I was talking about when you receive some feedback, holding it out in front of you rather than taking it inside of you and examining it and considering it with really open mind, because that's what we can do, and then we can choose what we do next with it. So yeah, I think Nigel, I'm the other end of the spectrum to Nigel. I would, particularly when I was in my early 20s, I wouldn't have told you, I wouldn't have given feedback. I'd have been petrified as to the impact I might have had. I'd worry about hurting your feelings or causing upset or doing some damage to the relationship. So we kind of come to this at opposite ends of the spectrum. So my perception of giving Nigel some honest feedback will be very different to his perception of giving me some feedback.
You just wait. it's true, and it's so interesting, because we're not always aware of the difference between our own perception and other people's. And your point about the map is not the territory is exactly right here, isn't it? That my perception of reality is just my opinion. It's not the truth. But as you move up in organization in leadership, you can, if you're not careful, be misled into believing that your opinion is the truth.
Yes.
And therefore what you give to people is your opinion, but you're not presenting it as your opinion. You're presenting it as an absolute statement of fact. Yeah, and that's very hard for people to hear, because they won't necessarily agree.
And I think the need for courage is reduced if you acknowledge and understand that it is just perception and it's an opinion, and you think it might be helpful and you want to see if the other person thinks it would be too. I mean, sometimes there's a lot of fact available. You know, if you're actually reprimanding someone and you need courage to have that honest conversation because they've broken a rule in the organization, we've been very clear. You know, there might be some very strong evidence to say that what you're seeing and perceiving is in fact the truth. But often it is around how do they view that behavior, say. Their perception might be entirely different to yours. So it's about a meeting of minds. If you are taking your ideas and your what you've seen and heard and wanting to share it in a positive way in order to do good, I feel like there's a greater chance of it needing less courage to have that discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, I've always thought that the attaching words like courageous or difficult or honest to a conversation unhelpfully elevates its intent and impact.
Yeah.
Because I think if you develop really good relationships with people, it stops being courageous because you can just tell each other the truth.
Yes.
And if you've got the kind of relationship where that happens, then this becomes part of everyday life. And even if it's quite intense piece of feedback, it's okay to give it. And they know it's okay for them to go, well, that's a lot of rubbish for a start because of this and this and this. And you can have that kind of debate, exchange of views. And that's okay.
What's really interesting there is that if you in NLP, we talk about people behave in certain ways with a positive intention. There's something, it's serving someone somewhere, the way they're behaving. Yeah. So sometimes when I hear feedback, I have to think, I almost try and dissociate from it and think, how is it serving that person? And what intention do they have that is positive, rather than feeling that it's critical for the sake of being critical? Actually, they gave it for a reason. They saw something that would be helpful, and trying to find that positive intention for the receiver can be super helpful. But yeah, Matt, back to your original question, as we did what we always do and wander off in various directions. I don't think there is a really neat description of what courageous conversation means. I love Nigel's take on the fact that it's just an honest conversation and people perceive that to be more or less easy.
Yeah.
And depending on how they're wired. And so this is about how to have an honest conversation and it land in the way that you want it to, with, you know, with a positive outcome.
It's very interesting the way you refer to it as feedback, because that has put it in a completely different context to me. Because when I was thinking about this topic beforehand, I was thinking, oh, well, there's different types of courageous conversation depending on where you sit in a hierarchy. And we'll come to talk about hierarchy later on. But then looking at it, actually, it's not, because, you know, you think, well, you know, a boss approaching it, if a boss has to talk to their direct report about some problem with their performance or something, that is them giving feedback. And then the same with the direct report, thinking, I'm not happy about something, I have to go to my boss. That's them giving feedback upwards. And so putting it in that context has really made me see that the fact there is no difference, you know, it is the same. I'm not sure I agree with what you're saying, Nigel, about there shouldn't be any courageous conversations, because I think there's always a chance that there's sometimes, you think, no matter how well you communicate with people, there's always sometimes, or can always be, some point where you're like, I want to have this conversation, I'm not sure, you know, how I'm going to talk about it. My wife and I communicate extremely well, but there are times when I'll sit down and think, right, okay, I want to say this, what's my best way of me going about it? And I'm sure that
my preferred choice under the circumstances. Or in an email from Rio de Janeiro, maybe.
Yeah. I think what's interesting there is sometimes it's around your perception of potential loss or damage, and the power play. So what conversations with your wife, that might be more around how much damage it might do. Honesty might cause some upset, and you don't want to cause upset unnecessarily. That's my perception of it. But in a power play, when you're having a conversation with your CEO and you're more, you know, one of his direct reports or her direct reports, that powers, that status might make you feel uncomfortable. That, have you really thought this through? Are you saying something for the right reasons? And that can cause people to kind of just check that they're doing things for the right, or saying things for the right reasons, and to get a positive outcome, you know, that there is a rationale for this discussion.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, several things come out of that for me. Firstly, when Matt said he disagreed with me, I like it. I enjoy it. I was thinking, oh, good. Let's get to it then. What are we going to discuss? Whereas for a lot of people, saying that you disagree with them is like you're saying they're a horrible human being.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that there's a thing here that it's easy to focus on the delivery.
Mm-hmm.
And even on the receipt, really, this thing without thinking about listening. I think the crucial thing here is this thing about listening to understand rather than listening to reply.
Yeah.
In a lot of these conversations, if you have them and the ground hasn't been really well prepared, what you get back is somebody reacting to the fact that you've said anything.
Mm.
I haven't actually listened to it or heard it, and you haven't thought enough about how it was going to land before you've done it, and you end up sparking something that wasn't necessary.
So for me, if someone says to me, I disagree, or gave me some really critical feedback on my performance, first thing is I'd be disappointed with myself that I hadn't performed to the standard I expect. And then I'd be disappointed that and concerned I'd let them down. And then I'd want to understand what I could do differently. So my whole mindset would be, I am wrong. What do I need to change? And make it very internal and own it inside. So it becomes quite, can become quite emotionally charged for me, because I'm very disappointed with myself. So if someone wants to set me up for feedback, it's exactly as you say, it's about laying the ground to allow me to listen and not feel like I need to take it inside. I was saying to these clients last week, I advise you to do this, and I'm trying really hard to do it too. It's a learning journey for all of us. So yeah, that very much knowing people, it matters. We go back to this every time, don't we? Knowing your people, the people you work with, the people you live with, and how they tick, so that you can have really effective conversations together and be honest.
Yeah. And I think actually effective conversations is a good title for this, because that's actually what we're talking about. Not the courage or honesty or difficulty or any of those kinds of things. It's effectiveness that's the issue. Have they moved things forward or not? If not, then it didn't work no matter what happened.
Mm. Yeah, that's a really interesting way, because it's looking at making your communication more effective generally.
Yeah.
As opposed to just thinking, okay, this one particular conversation is really important, so I have to get this one right. That one I'm not that bothered about. And it's if you get all those ones right, you might not need to have the big conversations anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. Totally.
You've created an open and honest culture and environment where the moment something bothers you or anybody else, they can verbalize it. You know, they can say it, and it becomes okay. And I think. It's interesting, Ronnie, you mentioned earlier, I think probably when the mics went on, about this thing about RADA and acting. It's an interesting thing that in acting workshops, people are brutal in their feedback and critique of things. I've been in a couple, not that I was acting particularly, although I discovered I was when I went in there. But people will absolutely tear you to pieces in 30 seconds. But they don't bear any kind of a grudge against you, and they expect you to do exactly the same to them, because they're so focused on getting better. But the brutality of the critique is meant to be a gift of feedback. It's meant to be.
I love that, because it really is taking feedback as a gift to that ultimate level. And for some people, they grow to become accustomed to that and accept it as the norm. And then imagine them going into a workplace where people aren't used to getting feedback. It'd absolutely crucify them. Mm. And then we've had that discussion about the difference between feedback and advice. Yeah. And I had an interesting discussion about this last week. The term feedback tends to make us think about things in the past. We tend to be very critical and analytical, as if we're giving someone advice for the future. It feels more supportive and developmental and engaging. And so I like those terms, although somebody did point out to me, if you went to your boss and said, just got a little bit of advice for you, they might be super offended. So that's quite an interesting take on it.
Okay, so let's talk about, assuming that there is a need for a courageous, difficult conversation, how can people prepare for it? What should they be doing in getting ready for it?
I think, firstly, just checking in with yourself to know how you're going to feel about this. And so if it's something that makes you feel overly confident, considering that someone else might or might not, and the other way around, and then planning what's the positive outcome you're looking to seek. Because when we know what we're trying to achieve, we can work out where we might start. So that kind of start with the end in mind. Often people, I think, start with getting it off their chest and haven't thought about the why, what is this for and why, and what will it lead to? And then grounding it in a sense of, is what I'm expecting fair and appropriate and relevant and all of the other things, so that we just temper our emotional response to something. Sometimes we can get very cross about something, want to get it off our chest and sort it out. We haven't quite thought about what the end point is, what we might need to achieve, or if that's the right thing for the audience or the recipient, so to speak. So yeah, just checking in with ourselves, checking what the positive intention is. And then I always say to people, plan for as long as you might talk, in the sense of, don't plan on the back of a piece of post-it paper. Plan properly and think about what you want to do so that you go in with that kind of start to end in mind. Not an end point that's a finished point, but a start of the next conversation. If that makes sense.
Right. So you're not talking about literally writing out everything that you're going to say. You're talking about plan where you want it to go and what the next steps are going to be as well.
Yeah, totally.
And I think that happens to people in these conversations sometimes, is that they go in assuming that they are at polar opposites.
Yeah.
In fact, they're not. If it was a Venn diagram, most of it would be in the intersection in the middle. There's just some bits around the outside. And I think it's important to recognize the points of agreement in order to make the points of disagreement easier to deal with.
Yeah.
And that's really the point I'm trying to make here, is that I think we often end up making it difficult by focusing on the things that we're not in accord about, when in fact, actually, most of it we can agree. It's just these other little bits. And if you are in agreement and if you struggle with conflict, the fact that you've had a conversation where you agreed with a lot of it makes the bit that comes next a little bit easier to deal with. You're not being hit over the head with some information there.
Yeah, and also in there, thinking around, if you're a detail person, your feedback might include a lot of detail. And if you're a big picture person, you might not be interested in that detail. You just want the big picture of what it was. So just thinking about what's the recipient's preferred style and how much detail do they need? Because a very detailed orientated person will say, tell me more about that and that and that. And if you've not thought of those things, that's quite tricky. Whereas the other way around, if you hit them with a load of detail, they'll think, I didn't need all of that. Let's just focus on what's most important. So there's quite a bit of planning, I think, just to ensure that the start of the conversation lands really positively and things get moving in the right direction, rather than starting in that uncomfortable space because you've not quite thought about how it'll be heard.
I like the phrase pre-positioning, that you pre-position somebody to hear something.
Yeah.
It might be beforehand, although I think this thing about making it too much of a formal process unnecessarily heightens the emotional impact of things when all you're actually doing is having a conversation. You exchange views, you're interacting as human beings. I think it's mostly about interpersonal skill, this thing about the ability to interact effectively with other people. Mm-hmm. But I do think that pre-positioning somebody so that it's most likely to go well is significant in this. It's so that, you know, I might preface the beginning of a conversation with, okay, I offer this in the spirit of helping you to develop and get better, because I think you're very good and you have the capability to be even better. So that's the spirit in which this is about to be said. So I'm only pre-positioning them 5 seconds before. I wouldn't have sent them that in an email the day before, or written it on a form that I sent them to fill in or something. It's just about opening channel D, as they used to say in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. when I was allowed. And so they actually hear what you're saying in that context, in that spirit.
I like that.
We did have this conversation when we were preparing for this episode, that, you know, whether you let people know in advance beforehand. And so it is, what you're saying is you should let them know, but don't give them too much detail.
Well, it depends on the person, doesn't it? I mean, some people might want 3 days to get them their ducks in a row so that they know they're ready for the conversation. And some people might be much better off reasonably sprung on them. That goes back to Ronan's point about knowing your people. You've got to know which is the most likely to be effective approach. Yeah,
there's a real need for some psychological safety there so that people feel like this conversation isn't going to damage them and that they can be honest back. And so if you said to me, exactly as Nigel started the feedback then, and said, I've noticed X and Y, I'd really like to dig into that with you, but you might want to take a little bit of time to think it through before we start that conversation. Would that be helpful? Yes or no? And I would say, yeah, actually, I just would really like to think, to reflect. So what that person's capacity to reflect is really important. And that's something the work we're doing with young people is around teaching them to notice and reflect on their behaviours, because then they can consider how they've presented themselves to the rest of the world and the impact they've had. And so here, depending on the person, having a conversation saying, this is what we're going to do, and then you'll know whether you're having that conversation now or whether they just need a little bit of time to go away and reflect and come back with some thoughts.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that there's some critical things in there, aren't there, about the nature of the relationship you have with somebody, that actually one of the things that goes against you sometimes if you are a good leader or a thought of as a good leader or somebody that they look up to, is that then your opinion becomes too important to the other person, that they care too much about your approval. Having any of these conversations becomes much more difficult. One of the techniques I've used, which won't work for everybody, is to be very, very open and almost over egg my own failings. It's not that hard. I have a very long list. And so that people feel like I'm not this perfect icon that has all this reputation, all this kind of stuff, that they recognize that, you know, my father once said that I couldn't find my own ass with a mirror on a stick. Right? And I've never forgotten that. It's funny and it's true. I have no sense of direction whatsoever, and I think forwards is north. That's always been my problem. No spatial awareness, no directional thought. So this is just me, another human being with all kinds of flaws and foibles, having a conversation with them about what I've observed and what I think about that, and they can say what they like about it. In response, we can be, you know, it's a safe, you use the word safe, I think that's critical in this, and that we're in a safe space where if they don't agree with the feedback I'm about to give them, say so, that's fine. There's a thing in here about trust that's come up, sort of been implied in a lot of this, isn't it? But if people trust you to have their best interests at heart, you can actually say anything because it'll be received in that spirit that they believe you're doing this for their benefit rather than in order to score points for yourself or make yourself look good. You know, and Gary Hamel said this, I think, is an American professor, and he's dead right about it, saying, you know, that we trust those who we believe care about us. And we mistrust completely anyone we think is deaf to our concerns. And that's so true. And in leadership, you know, several of the points you just made, I think a lot of leaders, as they get promoted, particularly into senior leadership, believe that they're now perfect because they've made it. And it's one of the reasons, I think, for the pathetically low percentage of senior leaders that are actually qualified to do the job they've now got, because they've been told that this was a reward for their brilliance rather than a set of responsibilities they've just taken on that they need to learn how to fulfill forever. And I think that building that trust is about demonstrating that you have people's best interests at heart. And these conversations are actually about that, not about smacking somebody around the head in order to tick your box that you've given them the feedback now and it's all right.
So while we're talking about leaders and leadership in this context, there is, of course, the fact that leaders can have several different types of conversations. They can be upwards, sideways, and downwards. Do they need to prepare differently for those conversations, or should they ideally all be the same sort of things?
So I think some people might be swayed by the amount of respect they hold for the person they're giving the feedback to. If they have real respect for them and hold them in esteem and want to add value to that person, they might be more likely to think more deeply about what they're going to do and say and why. And that can be quite dangerous, because then if you have less respect for someone, you might be a bit more brutal and you might not think things through quite as effectively, and you could do more damage, because just because you don't respect them as much doesn't make their ability to receive critical feedback any better. So I think I would do the short version of thinking it through for everybody and treat everyone in the same way rather than change how you might. But I say the short version, that's the short version for me, the overthinking version, but just the, why am I doing this? What value am I going to add? What outcome am I looking for? How are they going to hear this? What might I need to do?
So Nigel said earlier on that it's not about hierarchy, and maybe that's it. It isn't about hierarchy, but it is about what we've been talking about all along, knowing the person who you're going to have a conversation with. And if they are the sort of person who is very big into their hierarchy and I am above you, or you speak to me in a certain way or whatever, then you have to be aware of that and you have to allow for it. Whereas if they're not, then it doesn't matter. You just prepare for it. You prepare for the person, as you've been saying.
Yeah. And I think that as a receiver, it's a great skill to be able to calibrate your brain in the moment to think, this is you giving me feedback. And I know that a hierarchy is important to you, and you might give me feedback quite brutally because that's how you do it. And so if you can look at the person and go, oh, feedback's coming, right, I know how they give feedback, this is okay, this is their way, this is good, this is how I'm going to receive it. You can prepare both ways. That's a great skill to have. That's something we're looking at developing with the students we're working with. If you can reflect and you can have honest and open conversations and trust that they're for positive outcomes, God, the difference it will make to their lives.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's so true. And it's such an undervalued skill to be able to do this, because it is a skill. It's not a talent. This is something that you can develop, the ability to do this well from either end, you know, the ability to hear things clearly and with positive intent is every bit as important, if not more important, than the ability to deliver it with that positive intent. Because when it happens in a direction, whether that's downwards or upwards, it's immediately loaded one way or the other. And the more we can make this normal behavior, the less loaded it is.
Yeah, and the thing we've not thought about or talked about is that nowadays, with the rise of digital technology, many people are really comfortable giving very critical feedback when they're hiding behind an email or a comment on social media or wherever, on LinkedIn. Some of the things I read are brutal, and I think, I'm pretty sure you wouldn't say that to someone's face one-to-one in person. The bit that we've not mentioned is, of course, giving someone some open and honest feedback and doing that effectively needs to be face-to-face. The email and the takes away the emotion, the nuance of the way you say the words, the way your body language comes across, that your intention is totally lost in an email. It's just cold words, and the recipient is layering on their image of you, and they're hearing your voice in the way they see and receive you, not the way this is intended. I typically send people voice messages and not text messages, because a text message can be misconstrued, and plus it takes me forever to type them out. But actually I find that I'm getting my message across in a much better way, more effective way, by them hearing my voice. So what overarches all of this is it's got to be in person, and as in person, ideally physically together. It might need to be on a screen, but that needs to be voices and faces, not just hiding behind, you know, your initials on a screen, so that people can read you. Needs to be in a safe space so that people can respond as they want to and not feel like they're being observed or heard by somebody else. We need to think these things through so that people can feel comfortable and secure and be honest and reflect with you, and reduce some of that potential threat.
And have the opportunity to react, and for that reaction to be seen and reacted to.
Exactly. Because the number of times that I've given feedback over the years and thought, oh, I didn't expect that. You know, I didn't expect that response. I didn't think that you would, I didn't realize you were already really bothered about that as well. Or I didn't know that fact, whatever it might be. And for some people, it could be quite a surprise. So seeing that and feeling it, feeling the weight of emotional response, is whatever that looks like, upset or anger or everything in between, is really important.
And once we're talking about it needs to be face to face, that thing about location as well, and thinking about where it is going to take place, like you're saying, it needs to be face to face, it preferably needs to be in person, and it needs to be somewhere quiet that you're not going to get interrupted, and neutral as well, I guess.
Yeah, and I always think about the timing. So have you thought about the timing of the day? You know, at 10 to 5 at the end of the day on a Friday, where you're leaving someone to mull it over the weekend, and for some people that could be really tricky. Whereas if you can have it earlier in the day and there's opportunities to touch back together, have a 5-10 minute conversation if they need it, follow things up, someone knows that's absolutely fine. That can make a big difference.
That's all part of that thing about thinking about what's going to make it effective, isn't it? There's so many aspects to that.
Yeah,
it's true. And one of my techniques that I always used to use was to take people for a coffee. But it also took some of the sting out of the interaction. We weren't in my office or theirs. We were sitting down having a cup of coffee. It was already a relatively pleasant experience. It softened the kind of immediate emotional reaction to anything I might say.
Yeah, and sometimes for me, it depends on what the conversation is. It might be that it's a very honest conversation and I'm telling someone that something they did broke rules or was unacceptable and it can't continue. And I do want to have a discussion about that. But there is a very there's a kind of a right and wrong to it.
Yeah.
But then at other times I might be working with students and I really want them to have the opportunity to open up if they wish. And so taking them for a walk, we'd walk the school fields back in the days, just walk around the perimeter and have a conversation. Yeah. You get all, when you're side to side with someone and not face to face, you get very different responses, and that can be a much less threatening. Let people open up. They might not say anything, but there's the opportunity to. And of course you keep moving. You know, it can be a surprise to what comes next.
That's a really good point, actually. I had the one-to-one with one of my team in the summer, beautiful day, and I said, oh, actually, let's just go and walk around the gardens outside, and that was it. We had the one-to-one walking around the garden, we walked around a few times, and it was a really nice way of doing it, and I like to think that it made it more effective. So
yeah, and if you want to capture some notes, you can save yourself a quick voice message at the end of the key thing, so you don't lose the most important part of the discussion or whatever you're agreeing to do next. We often feel like it's got to be pen and paper and formal and recorded, and there's loads of ways of recording and ways of having those conversations. Most important thing is the what next. What are we going to do next? And I very much feel it's a we. So it's not just the other person that's hearing the feedback. It's what will we do? Mm. What's our commitment to one another to take the next steps so that it feels like a joint thing, not you're being done to.
Yeah, that's absolutely fundamental. I think you're doing right. And the shared responsibility for someone's performance is an essential aspect of leadership.
Mm.
You're not telling them they've got to get better. You're saying, let's work together to see what we can do.
Yeah, we're all trying to develop as people. Yeah. You know, people first. And so all of this feedback is super helpful.
Right. Well, I think we've reached a nice conclusion there. I'm just looking at the notes that I've written down, because I do like to give a bit of a summary at the end, and there's a lot of stuff that we touched on there. But I'll try and give a brief summary. Let me know if I've missed anything. So when we talk about courageous conversations, we're talking about anything that makes you feel uncomfortable at the thought of it. When we mention a conversation, it is feedback. If there is a hierarchy, regardless of which person you are in that hierarchy, you are effectively giving feedback, and you should look at it as feedback is a gift and it's a perception. It's not a reality. Both parties need to listen properly, something we've talked about in other episodes as well, really effective listening. You need to recognize the points of agreement and not just focus on the conflicts. So you might have, as Nigel was saying, it might feel as though you've had a lot of points of conflict, but if you look back on it, you could say, well, actually, there is an awful lot that we agree on here. So there's something to build on there. You need to know the person. I mean, that was what we came back to time and time again. Really know the person that you're going to have the conversation with, and prepare accordingly. You know, are they the type of person who would like to know in advance, or what is their capacity to reflect? You need to accept that there may not be closure at the end of this particular conversation. This could be the start of a process, or it might just take a little bit more time for you to close it off. It needs to be face-to-face. Really doesn't work in text form. And think about the location where to have the conversation so that it can be effective. And also at the end of the conversation, be clear on what our next steps are, not just mine or yours. And the more we communicate effectively, and this is the main point, I suppose, that we take, you know, if we communicated effectively on a day-to-day basis, then there'd be less need for courageous conversations to begin with. So maybe we should all sort of think about that as being the goal for all of this. Did I miss anything?
I think that was brilliant. Nigel's about to disagree, isn't he? I'm the agreeer and he's the disagreeer. You know, what I was thinking was actually, if I was a leader listening to this podcast now, I'd want to go away and think about, how do I receive critical feedback? You know, what's my MO and how do I respond? What do I look like? And I'd ask my colleagues for feedback on that, because they see me, I can't see me. So I know how it feels inside, but they'll know what it looks like and feels like to give the feedback and just gauge myself before I start considering then what I might do with others. I think it's so helpful to get to know yourself better all the time, because we just change and grow every day. So yeah, that would be a great place to start.
Cool. Yeah, great point to finish on. So thanks, Nigel. Thanks, Rona. And thank you for listening. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the topics discussed today. You can find us on LinkedIn by searching Inspirational Development Group or email us on info@inspirationaldg.com. If you would like to learn more about IDG and the work we do optimizing human performance through leadership development, you can find us at inspirationaldevelopment.com. We'll see you next time.